Blog Talk Radio.
Are you already in a relationship or are you looking for one? Do you want to know the real about relationships? Do you want to hear about adult topics discussed from a no-holds-barred approach? If that's the case, then this is the show for you. This is Real and Raw, bringing you the best in relationship radio. Join your host, Mr. Finesse, as I discuss the relationship topics which you want to hear. I promise you that I will make the conversation real and raw.
This is real and raw. This is real and raw. Uncut with Mr. Finesse. Any topic you want to address, pick up the phone, call Mr. Finesse. This is real and raw. This is real and raw. Tune in for some real life-ish. Anything you want ain't nothing private. Pick up the phone, call Mr. Finesse. This is real and raw. This is real and raw.
Watch. Here we go.
Watch. Hey, everybody. It's your man, Finesse, along with my co-host, Dr. Stephen E. Gardner, and welcome to Unchurched Live. You know what it is. It is a no-holds-barred spiritual conversation for the seeker and the skeptic. And Dr. Gardner, while I print up the title or list the title of tonight's show, how you doing, sir?
I'm doing pretty good, man.
I'm glad to hear that. I'm doing all right, too, sir. I'll get this title up. And it is the going opinion, if you will, is that it's not about sex, it's about power. Doc, is that your understanding?
That's my understanding. Things cleared up.
Perfect. All right, thank God. So it's not about that. It's really about power, it's about privilege, it's about entitlement. So to that end, November 13th, Steve Jurvetson, he's co-founder of a venture capital firm. He's a board member of Tesla and SpaceX. He was accused of sexual misconduct, and he said no such allegations were true. I'm going to skip down because some of these, Doctor, are incredulous. Is that the right word? Or incredible? Incredible. Andrew Kreisberg, executive producer of Arrow, Supergirl, and The Flash. He was accused of sexual harassment of more than a dozen people. He was suspended. Listen to this. I have made comments on women's appearance and clothes in my capacity as an executive producer, but they were not sexualized. Like many people, I've given someone a non-sexual hug or kiss on the cheek, said Mr. Kreisberg, who denied the accusation. Now, Doctor, let's pause that a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I may have made comments on women's appearances and clothes in my capacity as an executive producer. What kind of comments?
Okay.
Right. And they were not sexualized. Well, who is the interpreter of sexual behavior, sexualized behavior? The one who engages or the one who is the recipient? In my opinion, and I said this on my show Monday night, it's the recipient.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's about who's interpreting the action.
Exactly. And the one who is interpreting it at the end of the day is the one who is on the receiving end of the behavior. Like many people, he says, I have given someone a non-sexual hug or kiss on the cheek. How does that's intimate? You see what I'm saying? So how could he determine that it was non-sexual? Maybe it was non-sexual from his perspective, but what is it? Was it non-sexual from the person who he kissed? Evidently not, because more than a dozen people. Now, it doesn't say women, so maybe it was men and
well,
or women, right?
Well,
you understand what I'm saying? And this is for those who want to know: is this a gossip column? Is this a rag, you know, the kind that you see when you go to the checkout line in the grocery store? No, this is the New York Times.
Okay, the interesting thing too, man, is that all these people that are accused are all people that are in positions of power.
There it is. There it is. Thank you for those who are logging on. They're all in positions of power. I just want to list a few more. And there's one that I'm going to get to that is it's insane what this particular person says. Louis C.K. He was accused of sexual misconduct with five women, including exposing himself and masturbating in front of them.
Oh, my goodness.
And this is his response. And I read this past week, and it was a couple of paragraphs, his response. I'm just going to read the most telling line. These stories are true, he says. Quote, I have been remorseful of my actions. So I do not condone what he did. I appreciate the fact that he would come out and admit, because almost all of these people, including Roy Moore, who refuses to rescind or step down from his bid for political office. And he was accused, I think, of the worst, sexual misconduct with five teenagers.
Oh, wow.
When he was a prosecutor, he was 32 in his early 30s, and one of the first accuser was 14 at the time. Now, Doc, hold on to your seat. And there's one, and I have to. This is the last one. Where is it here? Dr. Andy Dick, who's an actor, the last example, and I'll post the article. He was accused of sexual harassment, including groping. Viewing audience, listening audience, listen to what he said. Doctor, listen to what he said. He said, I didn't grope anybody. I might have kissed somebody on the cheek to say goodbye and then licked them.
So he's a dog.
Exactly. He said, doctor, listening audience, viewing audience, the topic tonight is power, money, power, privilege, and the problem of sexual harassment. All these people, and I think I have highlighted three, is about 10. Listen to what he said. He said, I might have kissed somebody on the cheek to say goodbye and then licked them. I'm not trying to sexually harass people. What?
You know, so the question then is this.
Yes.
You know, is this a bandwagon type ordeal whereby, oh, this person come out and says something that's condemning, and then everybody jumps on the bandwagon. Well, he did this, he did this, he
exactly.
did this. So I'm just wondering, before this got out there, those who do not get on board immediately, were they okay with it?
It's interesting. And I dealt with this on Monday night's show, and that was Real and Raw. It's a relationship show. I heard a radio personality, Charlemagne the God, I believe it is 105.1 FM. I believe the call letters are WQHC. If I don't have the call letters correct, my apologies. It is 105.1 FM. He said something that was very telling about this whole sexual harassment, I would say epidemic, at least in terms of selected high-profile men. He said, is there a statute of limitations on someone's trauma?
Wow.
Powerful, right?
He went clinical on it.
He went clinical on it. He said, is there, I'm just going to adjust my camera, is there a statute of limitations on someone's trauma? And then he said, is there a statute of limitations on someone's truth, their story? So,
trauma and truth.
Right. So from the outside looking in, he was suggesting, who are we to determine when a person who's been sexually harassed chooses to tell their story? Tamara Summers, good evening. You know, who are we to, and he doesn't, and by, of course, by we, he doesn't mean you or I. He's just saying the larger community, who are we to determine, well, you should have said something in 3 years, or you should have said something in 5 years, or you should have said something in 3 months. And I want to assume that someone who experienced unwanted licking, whether or not they reported it,
unwanted licking.
You understand what I'm saying? Because I'll go back, just for our audience, I'll go back. And I'll cite this person again. I'm simply reading from and quoting this New York Times article entitled, "After Weinstein, a List of Men Accused of Sexual Misconduct and the Fallout for Each." It was by three authors, actually, and it was updated 7 p.m. November 15th. So I will scroll down, because it almost seems fantasy-like for someone to lick somebody. This is Andy Dick, who's an actor. "I didn't grope anybody. I might have kissed somebody on the cheek to say goodbye and then licked them. I'm not trying to sexually harass people." That is a quote. I'm not summarizing. I'm not paraphrasing. I'm quoting. So, or Louis C.K., who admitted to exposing himself in front of women and masturbating. I would think that if they're accusing him several months or 7 years later, that they were not okay with that. And even if it took several months or several years to report, who am I to say, well, you should have reported early? I think that speaks, if it were me, I think it speaks to the inherent sexism within me, or would, as well as within this society. And it's almost like blaming the victim.
Hmm. Well, yeah, I mean, in a lot of cases, you know, the victim is going to get blamed and is going to be trying to be discredited.
Exactly.
The thing that I find so interesting in all this, you know, like I said, everybody's starting to come out and everybody's pointing the finger at, you know, different personalities and different celebrities and the like. The question is, is this an epidemic? What made these individuals feel like that they could go to the extent of licking, you know, I mean, groping, but to admit licking, what gives that person to feel like that they are free to do that?
So now, in light of the fact, Doctor, that you said that, I'm going to list the men who were accused of sexual assault. David Guyod, who's the co-chief executive of Primary Wave Entertainment Agency. He was accused of sexual assault.
And this is in what newspaper?
This is in the New York Times, updated
okay.
November 15th. Matter of fact, what I'm going to do is I'm going to share the link.
I think it'd be good, because that way, you know, if someone would say, well, you know, you're causing defamatory statements against a person.
There it is.
We need to be able to
substantiate.
The source. You know, this is not just something we come off the top of our head.
No, not at
you
all.
Know, we're not reading this in TMZ or any other type of gossip news column.
Nope.
The New York Times.
The New York Times. And so I will say, and again, I'm not even going to say allegedly, because here these are quotations. See, so Mr. Guyod, David Guyod, accused of sexual assault. Ed Westwick, who's an actor. This is November 7th, November 3rd, David Guyod. He was accused of raping two women. He denies it. Brett Ratner, producer and director, very famous. He was accused of rape, sexual assault, and harassment. Kurt Webster, a music publicist, October 31st, accused of sexual assault. And Kevin Spacey, accusation, October 29th, accused of sexual assault of multiple men and sexual misconduct with a minor. Let's see, one more. Then we'll move on from this particular section of our show. Robert Scoble, a tech blogger and co-founder of the Transformation Group, sexual assault of at least two women. This is crazy. Harvey Weinstein was, I believe, doctor, the first to be exposed, the first to be accused, raping three women, sexual assault and harassment of dozens of others, and it goes on. So to get at your question, and I'd like those who are listening and viewing to definitely add to this conversation, I think it goes back to the title, Money, Power, Privilege, and the Money, Power, and Privilege. And a culture that objectifies women, I'll use a word that is probably not in the dictionary. I think it, and I remember thinking about this about 30 years ago, thingifies women. Thingifies, making a thing of. So to say it in a more sophisticated manner, objectifies. And I think these men are archetypes, are representative of the sexism that's in our culture. That it's okay to act toward a woman in a sexual or sexualized manner, whether or not they want us to. That's really, doctor, at the heart of it. In these men's minds, it was okay to kiss, touch, hug, masturbate in front of, lick, assault. It was okay. Now, we can argue that part of it is, well, the Hollywood culture, the whole casting couch phenomenon, that may well be true. Yet, to what extent is it representative of how some men in America, to perhaps a lot of men, think?
Well,
yes, it's deep, and you know what? It's uncomfortable. However,
it's uncomfortable. That's probably a really safe word to use. It's uncomfortable.
It's uncomfortable. At the same time, if we on Unchurched Live are going to speak to all of the issues of the day intelligently, from an informative perspective, I don't know how entertaining we're going to be tonight, because this is not a topic that's
not,
you see what I'm saying, that lends itself to entertainment, and I know comedians can take anything and make it funny. I'm not a comedian. I know you're not a comedian. So tonight we're doing our best to be informative and to get people to think. Because maybe there's someone watching or listening, male or female, who may have that mindset, or maybe someone we know who may have that mindset. And there are tons of examples in our culture. For example, in media, 1991 or 1992, Dr. Dre and Snoop Dogg, Ain't Nothing But a G Thing, that song 25 years later is still an anthem. I saw the video, seen it a number of times. There's a scene in the video in which there's some gentlemen who walk up to a young lady who is fairly voluptuous, pull her, I think it was a halter top, pull it down, expose her breasts. See what I'm saying? We have Freaknik, you know, keg parties, other kinds of events where there are women and men just seem to feel like they can do whatever they want to do because they're men.
Mm. So is it always men?
It's not always men. As a matter of fact, I think this is a good time to look at, there is a scripture in the Old Testament. And I know it's in Genesis. I'm going to search it out. It is the account of Joseph in the Old Testament and the wife of a man named Potiphar.
Oh, yeah.
All right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to just Google it right now. Joseph and Potiphar's wife. Let me just find the particular passage.
Okay, Tamara has something to say there.
All right, it's in Genesis 39. Tamara, let me just get to you in a second. And right now, some women accepted these things at first because of our culture, being taught to take it. Yet as women begin to realize that there are others suffering, then they can stand up. Stand up and tell someone about it. I was raped twice as a teenager and didn't say anything until I was older. And Tamara, I appreciate your courage to even share that. I will, a little bit of a lighthearted moment, perhaps. My first co-host, we actually started Real Relevant and Raw 4 years ago. Her name was Sadie Sharp. She would jokingly tell me that in light of my perspective and my presentation on our show at the time, that I was a women's liberationist. And ironically enough, she said that she was a male chauvinist. That's how she self-described. And I would say that I wear that, which she said, that I was a women's liberationist as a badge of honor, because even, as a man, I try to do my best to be one who would empower women. So Tamara, to your point, we live in a sexist culture in America. We got to name that. And I think even within the church, there's sexism. I saw a post on Facebook, either it was today or yesterday, that essentially said, any church that allows women to preach is disobeying God.
Hmm.
And there were some likes.
Wow.
See what I'm saying? And so that, I think, scripturally has given rise to the feminist hermeneutic, the feminist interpretation of the scriptures, which is a corrective. I don't want to say corrective to the scripture, but a corrective to the patriarchy that can be read into the scripture. And the patriarchy that could have been part of the Middle Eastern culture out of which the scriptures have arisen.
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Right, right.
So Tamara, to your point, women have been acculturated to suffer in silence when it comes to sexual harassment. That's a reality. And sometimes it takes one voice to give the other voices of women the courage to speak out.
So then, if this case is going on in the world, I wonder how much of this is going on in the church. And because of religion and because of it being a sacred place and the word forgiveness.
Yes.
And grace, all of these mercy and all these things. I wonder if this problem is just as perpetrated in the church. And I'm wondering if more people in the church that have experienced this type of disservice, that is called this type of dis-ease, are they going to start speaking up and speaking out? Or are they afraid to speak up and speak out because the church stuff should stay in the church? But if it's in the church, these things that are happening in the world are a crime.
Agreed.
So are we allowing crime to be, held in the church and not really dealt with appropriately?
Let's
get into it. Go quick.
Listen to what I'm going to read. What Tamara said. It's in the church. A female friend told me a married pastor sent her a picture of his penis.
Wow.
See, doctor, listen. This is uncomfortable. It's really not uncomfortable for me now. I mean, I don't even know if it was on Monday, but I've had, this is the second show of which I've talked about it. It can be seen to be uncomfortable, yet we've got to go beyond our comfort zones. And if Unchurched Live is going to be relevant and has to be able to speak to all the issues of the day, which we are, it's in the church. There are pastors and other leaders in the church, male and female, who sexually harass. That's a fact. Now, do I have examples in the 30 plus years I've been in and around and involved in the church? Yes.
Okay, there's another comment she said there.
She had several pastors offer to do oral sex with her. Several pastors. So is it, again, we said this at the beginning, and this is the title, Money, Power, Privilege. Money, power, and privilege. Now, most pastors don't have a lot of money, so it's still a position of power and privilege. It's a power issue, and to me, it is expressed in a sexually perverted manner.
Okay.
You see what I'm saying? So let me not miss your question. Genesis 39, and I'm going to skip down to the latter part of verse 6 down to verse 12. So Potiphar left everything he had in Joseph's care. And with Joseph in charge, he did not concern himself with anything except the food he ate. So now Joseph was the house manager of a wealthy man named Potiphar. This is the context. Listen to what, this is scripture now. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, quote unquote, come to bed with me. But he refused. Quote, with me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he has entrusted to my care. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? And though she spoke to Joseph day after day, he refused to go to bed with her or even be with her.
So she was perpetrated. That's sexual harassment.
That's what I'm saying. That's sexual harassment. And now I'm finished. One day, he went into the house to attend to his duties, and none of the household servants was inside. She caught him by the cloak and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. That's sexual harassment.
Listen, and we know the rest of that story.
We know the rest of that story.
You know, because of that, she took that cloak and said that, and twisted it, and said that he had came over to her and
exactly.
He got thrown in prison.
Yes.
For something that he did not do, or something that he refused to do, he got blamed for it. There are other examples, you know, of privilege and power. And in sexual context, I'm thinking of a well-known king in the Bible, and that's is King David. And King David, you know, he had his eye on this particular man's wife.
Right.
And so he wanted her so bad that, you know, and he happened to be a soldier. And so he sent him to the front line and was killed and took her as his wife. Power.
Right. And power expressed in a sexual or sexualized manner. So we've established that this is about power and privilege. It's about a sense of entitlement. And for those who have money, it's about money. Power, position, entitlement, and money kind of have, there's this dynamic interplay. Even if you remove money, there are those like pastors who are in positions of power. And maybe these men have not worked through their own sexual issues. Because
possibly.
At the very least, it's unhealthy. It borders on the perverted and the abhorrent. And to your point, doctor, that you mentioned earlier, it's criminal behavior. It's criminal behavior.
So how do we go about, from a unchurched life perspective, you know, we're bringing this information out, you know, so that it's a dialogue. This is a platform that we can discuss these kind of things. And we don't have to worry about whether or not we're going to get ousted from our church.
No.
You know, we don't have to worry about whether or not we're going to get silenced or we're going to get, you know, defrocked, you know, for talking about. It's almost as bad as what we see happening in, you know, the Catholic Church, you know, where you see a lot of the things. I mean, I lived in Indianapolis at the time, and there was a newspaper called the Indianapolis Star. And Cameron, I know you know about the Indianapolis Star. And a few years ago, it's either early 2000 or late 90s or whatever, there was a full-page article with sections of a list of priests that were accused of sexual misconduct and the like. And they posted these people's names. They showed their pictures. They stayed with church that they attended, the parish that they attended, and they were all accused of sexual misconduct, and in some cases with boys, with young men, young seminarians, mm-hmm. Whatever the case it might be. And so, the Catholic Churches has probably been the most exposed religious organization where these kinds of crimes go on, and where they would, something would happen with one priest, and so they send him off to another parish somewhere else. But I think when these kind of things do come out, whether they come out in the church or whether they come out in secular society, it is a message to society that says we have a problem, and we need to deal with it. We need to try to get to the bottom of it. You know, I don't know about you, man, but I have grass in my backyard.
Mm.
I have grass in my backyard even now. You know, the weather's changing back there. I'm sorry. I feel for you, brother. But, you know.
Yeah, man, it's changing. It's changing.
My grass is still green. However, you know, from time to time, what I have to do is that I have to treat that grass, whether it be winter grass or whether it be other grass, for weeds. And you just can't take the lawnmower and cut over those weeds. You have to apply either you have to go out there and uproot them, or you have to apply the right type of chemical compound to actually destroy the weed at the root. And so in society, we have a problem. And if the problem of sexism and power is out there in the world, and the church is supposed to be a safe haven where people in the world can come and, you know, whatever the issues that they have and get the help they need. But if the same problem out there is also in the church, then, and we as a church, as the church, universal, are not really dealing with the real issue of sexism, privilege, and power. We've got to deal with that.
Well said. And I think, in viewing and listening audience, I was looking up the second scripture. So I was listening, I was paying attention. I just wanted to review the scripture before Dr. Gardner and I discuss it. I think that there is, in many respects in this society, an unhealthy relationship to sex. That when you combine it with money, power, and privilege, it can yield the kinds of behaviors that we are seeing.
You know, we don't, even television, man, we can go back 30 or 40 years and we had the Leave It to Beaver type shows where, you know, you would not see the exposure of a woman's anatomy or exposure of a man's anatomy. You would not even see them in bed, you know, none of that stuff was even implied. But now, you know, you can't even watch even a good crime show or a good show if you like good television,
mm-hmm.
and where you don't see some sort of exposure of the human anatomy, or you see people going at it, and you know, and sometimes it just kind of ruins what the whole message behind the storyline, because it, right there in your face,
yes,
you've got people going at it. And so that becomes, I think, it kind of feeds into this demon, as it were, of sexism, privilege, and power. And I call it a demon, whether you want to say it's the devil or not, but it has it's an incarnation of a problem that is taking advantage of the minds of young people, is taking advantage of the minds of older people as well, to where we are numb to the point, it's okay for me to lick somebody in the face.
That's
me.
And you know what? I mean, we can surmise that it was the face, but we don't know. See what I'm saying? But nevertheless, we don't know. You know, but nevertheless, it happened. And doctor and audience, do you know one of the reasons I love the scripture? Because every issue that exists within the human community, the scriptures talk about.
Right.
And we would be surprised concerning the graphic nature of some of that discussion. So, to that end, 2 Samuel 13, that's in the Old Testament, it is entitled, if one was to entitle this section, The Rape of Tamar.
Mm.
Now, I'm not going to read the entire section. I'm going to read the first two verses, and then I'm going to skip down to the actual discussion of the rape. Verse 1 and verse 2. Now, David's son Absalom had a beautiful sister named Tamar, and Amnon, her half-brother, fell desperately in love with her. Amnon became so obsessed with Tamar that he became ill. She was a virgin, and Amnon thought he could never have her. And I'm going to skip down. So I read verses 1 and 2 of 2 Samuel in the Old Testament, chapter 13. Skip down to verse 10.
Mm-hmm.
Then he, Amnon, said to Tamar, "Now bring the food into my bedroom and feed it to me here." So Tamar took his favorite dish to him, but as she was feeding him, he grabbed her and demanded, quote, "Come to bed with me, my darling sister."
Mm. Mm.
"No, my brother," she cried. "Don't be foolish. Don't do this to me. Such wicked things aren't done in Israel. Where could I go in my shame? And you would be called one of the greatest fools in Israel. Please just speak to the king about it, and he will let you marry me." But Amnon, and I read verse 12 and verse 13, now verse 14. But Amnon would not listen to her, and since he was stronger than she, listen to that power, since he was stronger than she was, he raped her. Then suddenly Amnon's love turned to hate, and he hated her even more than he had loved her. "Get out of here," he snarled at her. "No, no," Tamar cried. This is verse 16, the final verse I'm going to read. "Sending me away now is worse than what you've already done to me." Wow.
Sending you away
worse.
Is worse than what you've already done to me.
Right. And I mean, I'm just going to let that sit for a moment, because this is the scripture. He loved her.
Mm-hmm.
And when he was attempting to force himself, she said, "Yo, basically, listen, just speak." Where is it here? "Just speak to the king, and he'll let you marry me." So
just speak to the king.
Right. And she's not even saying, "I want to marry you." But what she said is, "Look, if you want me that badly, then just marry me and you can have me." Which is there think about that. Is there inherent sexism even in this text? That it doesn't seem from this text that she even had the power of choice. Power, right? And then it wasn't the kind of love that we see in the New Testament, agape, God's love. It really was lust.
It was lust. Okay.
And so when his lust was satisfied, it said he began to hate her, and even more than he loved her. Now, he loved her enough to go back to verse 2. He was so obsessed with his quote-unquote love that he became ill. So now, if he hated her more than he loved her, what was his physical state after he hated her?
Well, you know, and the thing about it is, it's not just in the, I was looking, trying to find the passage here.
Genesis 39.
Huh?
Genesis 39. And it's
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to find the passage here on my phone.
Okay.
And and it's referring to Paul admonishing the Corinthian church because one of their members was after or went after his father's wife.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was not just a problem in the Old Testament, but we see that Paul had to deal with this type of misconduct in the church in the New Testament.
Yes.
So it's a problem.
Incest, exactly. It was an incestuous relationship.
It's an incestuous relationship. And so if it's a problem in the church, and it's a problem, and it has been a problem that has been going on for a long period of time, we're going to get to it, but what's the solution? Here is a story, and this is the interesting thing. The Bible refers to three types of sin or characteristics of sin: the lust of the eye, the lust of the flesh, and the pride of life. And the story is that when the serpent in the garden came and with his alluring approach to those to experience, well, in this case, it was Eve, the lust of the eye was that she looked at the apple, you know, and it was desirous. And then it would make one wise. So you got the lust of the eye, you got the lust of the flesh. It would make one wise, pride of life, you know. And it's been said, it's been overlaid that that is where the beginning of those three things come from. Fame, female, you know, finances, whatever you want to say, lust of the eye, lust of flesh, pride of life, sexism, privilege, and power. All of that came from that particular story in the garden. And it's been said that Jesus overcame all three of those things through his temptation in the wilderness.
Mm-hmm.
That the devil, some ominous being or influence came to him and said, look, you know, I know you're hungry. Turn these stones to bread, you know, lust of the flesh. Took him up to the mountain and showed him all the kingdoms of the world, the moment of time. You know, look, I'll give it to you. You know, lust of the eye.
Mm.
If you just bow down and worship me, you know, it'll be yours. So he was attacked in the same area that mankind is still being attacked through sexism, power, and privilege.
Thank you for those who are logging on. Ricky Vera, I appreciate it. He just returned from wrestling. Ricky, we had some issues with the audio at the beginning of the show. We've since resolved those. I will post the rebroadcast tomorrow morning so you can catch the show in its entirety. So from a theological standpoint, Jesus is our example of one who overcame all of those temptations.
But how did he do it? That's the question. I mean, the answer is there. I'm just raising the question so we can illuminate the answer.
So let me deal with it in reverse, because I think if I answer the question of how Jesus did, I think it may make this, which I think is a multifaceted issue, overly simplistic.
Okay.
So I'll look, because I thought about it, Doctor, more from a human standpoint. I think we've got it. As men, we've got to get in touch with how we've been conditioned in this society. Men, not white men or black men or Indian men or Asian men or Hispanic men, or did I say Indian men? Whatever our ethnicity, it's let's put all that aside as men, because even though as black men we are part of an oppressed group, there's still a piece of that what's the word, transcends oppression. As men, we've got to get in touch with how we've been conditioned to view women in this society, that in many respects we have been taught to objectify women. Additionally, we have been taught that sexual conquest is something that is celebrated. It's a rite of passage in this society. And when we have not processed and resolved our own sexual dysfunction, when we have positions of power and privilege at the micro level, family, community, or at the macro level, society, then in its extreme, it can result in sexual harassment and sexual assault.
Okay. All right.
So we've got to get in touch with all of that, process it, and make sure we are not behaving in ways that suggest that women are objects, that are sexist, and that are dysfunctionally sexual toward women. That's it may take looking at Jesus as an example. It may take looking at scripture as a guide. It also takes engaging in the spiritual disciplines, and it can also mean therapy if we need it. That's my answer.
Okay. All right. So
I know I said a lot, but
no. You're very intelligent response there.
Thank you, sir.
I think one of the things that we, deal with in society that makes this whole sexism industry is the strip club.
Mm.
And that's a place where people go, you know what I mean? I don't know if you've ever been. I'm not even going to talk about that. We're not going to. But the idea is.
Yeah, we could talk, Doc, we could talk about it. I have been, listen, it's no shame in my game. You know, this is a no holds barred conversation. It's a no holds barred conversation. Yes, it probably goes back 20 years. Yes, I've had lap dances. I've been to strip clubs. You understand? And when my spiritual formation was not as strong, and since you bring it up, when my spiritual formation was not as strong, honestly, a good lap dance relieve my stress. I'm a lot further. I'm just keeping it real, you know, like you said, and I'm not embarrassed by it. I'm not proud or ashamed of it. It was what it was. You understand? So yes. And interestingly enough, that is a context in which women are objectified. Now here's the other thing, in which women objectify themselves.
Mm. That's not the only type of strip club. You got male strip clubs too.
Exactly. So I'm glad you said that, because that's a place where men are objectified, and when men objectify themselves. Now I don't know that we'll do a whole show about strip clubs, but because there's some deep psychology going on.
Okay, so if a strip club gives license, there's this idea, I can go in there and it's okay for that type of exploitation to go on, you know, and nobody says anything, you know. I've heard, because I don't frequent them, those places, and that was just not my forte. But I've heard that if you cross the line, then the bouncer would, escort you out, and so those kinds of things like that. And so it's supposed to be a place where this is okay.
Right.
We're not even, and I can take it a step further to talk about some of the things that went on in Rome. And in the Greco-Roman world, to where there were temples, religious temples, to where orgies and the like, you know, were okay. And that is what the gospel and the early church had to compete with, you know, the culture of debauchery, the culture that that raised the level of the human anatomy,
yes,
and sexual conquest. You know, they had to compete with that. You know, and so it's been a problem. This type of what the Bible calls unbridled lust that has been given license in American culture.
Well said.
Now,
well,
you know,
said.
There are some cultures that you just can't get away with. That is why, you know, you find in a lot of Muslim cultures and those, the women are covered up.
And you know what? Doctor, if I could interject, I remember watching this. I don't know if remember if it was CNN or what station it was, what program, but it was a documentary. And I believe, I won't even try to cite the media person who was part of this documentary. I do remember, I think it was in Pakistan. And it was interesting that in this documentary, the statement was made, women cover, listen to this audience, women cover so that the men won't be tempted.
Okay.
You hear that?
Yeah.
Listen to the nuance. And thank you for those who are logging on. Women cover so that men won't be tempted. And this is not in any way, this is Michael D. Teague, Finesse, speaking for himself. This is in no way Islam bashing. I respect Islam. My father, even though we don't have a good relationship, is a Muslim. I've been to Juma. I have a Quran in my library. I've read it. But think about, what is that saying? To me, it's saying that it's the woman's job to keep the man from being tempted, not the man's job to control himself sexually. And that's, to me, inherently sexist.
Okay. All right.
That's almost like blaming the victim. See?
Or saying that they can't help themselves. So,
right.
You know.
So the man has no responsibility. That's the word I've been searching for. The man has no responsibility to control his urges. The man has no responsibility to control himself. So let's make sure the women are not doing anything to make that man or encourage that man to lose control. What?
Okay. But keep in mind, I mean, that's a modern statement made by this Pakistani.
Yes.
But the Middle East have covered up for years.
Yes.
They were covered up in the days of Jesus. So this whole covering up issue is not just something that just, boom, just come out in the 21st century. It has been a historical tradition that women cover up.
So, Doc, let me just jump in because Jason Osborne, we appreciate you logging on. So are you promoting a coverage of Muslim culture? I'm not, Jason, I'm not exactly sure what you mean. So I will answer it. Just make your question a little bit more clear. I will say that we're not promoting Islam or any particular religion per se in Unchurched Live. It's a no holds barred spiritual conversation. I was talking about a documentary in which the commentator or one of the actual interviewees said that women cover so that men won't be tempted. And what I'm pointing out is, in my opinion, the inherent sexism in that statement. I say the covering of women is too much causes a naive view of what God has given us through sex. Again, for me, and I appreciate your statement. Again, for me, and I don't know if you've been watching for the whole show, but we've been talking about sexual harassment, and we're looking at it from kind of a theological perspective. Part of what we've been talking about tonight is just the whole notion of sexual harassment is an issue, if nothing more, of power, privilege, and entitlement, with or without money. But once you add money to it, in particular, those recently who've been accused, they all have money. How much? I don't know. But they're not paupers. They're rich and wealthy. And once you have all of that together, and people who have not processed their sexual behavior, the extreme of that is sexual harassment and in some cases sexual assault. Doctor, I think we're going to go a little bit over the hour. Is that all right?
That's right.
Okay. So, Doc, I interrupted because Jason had commented. Is there anything you want to continue? And then I want to look. I don't even know. I think we should look at this, Doctor, when Paul in 1 Corinthians 7 talks about married life. But before that, is it something that you wanted to add?
No, I was just saying that, you know, if we're going to really wrestle with the issue of sexism, privilege, and power to be a universal problem.
Yes.
Faith institutions, and I'm including all, should have some input as to how to help, you know, with this particular problem. And then, you know, since I come from a Judeo-Christian background, I can only refer to the Bible as what the Bible shows us. And the Bible is very open about this particular problem. It doesn't hide it.
Not at all.
We talked about a king, David, who is celebrated as one of the greatest kings within Hebrew history. Yet he had a woman's husband sent to the front line and killed so that he could have her. That is how power works. You know, I can take what I want.
Exactly.
If I got money, I can have what I want. And so this whole problem, unbridled lust, it has not been put in check, and it has been put in check for all these years. So faith institutions have to be able to speak up and say, how are we going to deal with this heart problem?
See,
this heart problem.
Exactly. The thing is, faith institutions are human institutions. So let's review a couple of things, a few things. Number one, at the outset, and I posted the article from the New York Times in the chat. Sexual harassment, because sexual assault is a more violent type of act. Sexual harassment is to be defined by the recipient of the action, not by those who engage in it. So some of the examples I read of men who were accused, they basically said, well, I might have kissed, I might have hugged, but it was non-sexual. Well, who defines that? The one who's being acted upon, in my opinion, defines that.
Well, for that person, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, it's okay.
For that person to say that, to feel like that it was not harassment, what does that tell you about his perception?
Exactly.
Of his action?
Exactly. And so here's something else. When a man or woman says no, stop. Mm-hmm. Stop. I mean, we've been theoretical, we've been heady, we've been intelligent. We've looked at this from a number of perspectives, which I appreciate. I appreciate all the comments in the chat, and if I respond to all of them during the broadcast, we'll extend this beyond way beyond the hour, and I don't want to do that, though I appreciate Jason, Ricky, others, Tamara, who've commented. It's very simple. If someone, male or female, says no, stop. I'm not going to be as graphic as I was on Monday night because this is more of a spiritual show, but we're all intelligent. You could be, and I'll be delicate, you could be in the moment, right? But if, and I'm a man, and let's say I'm thinking about a woman, if she says no, I stop. It doesn't matter how aroused, how ready, how lubricated, whatever. No, to me, no means no. See what I'm saying? And doctor and audience, I think as men, we got to respect the no. And even if it's a coy no, even if it's a weak no, even if it was a yes that became a no. See, no for me means no. Stop. Now, if we had a female co-host, she could speak to women about being clear, but I'm not going to do that because for me to do that, in my opinion, audience, means that I'm behaving in a sexist manner and I'm doing my best to be in touch with whatever sexism may exist in me and mute that. So I have to take responsibility for me as a man, and I'm suggesting this to men, and for those who are married, it's interesting. We're going to end up with something that may cause us to step back for a second, but to me, no means no. I have to respect the no. I can't say, nah, you really meant yes. Like in the scripture we talked about earlier, right, Doctor? The rape of Amnon and Tamar. She said, no, listen. He basically said, no, nah, you want, I'm no, I'm going to do it anyway.
And then after he did it, then he...
He hated her.
He hated it, threw it away like trash.
Like trash. So, Doctor, can we get to this? This is the question. In marriage, if man and woman, I know that there could be men and men, women and women. We're going to look at this. We'll look at this as the case of a heterosexual situation, though it applies to other situations as well. If your, and I'll make it general, if your partner says no, do you still have a right over that partner's body? Ricky Vera, before I get to that, there was silence. Ricky Vera, Michael, we are egotistical and men in power do not accept the word no. When they cannot get, they take. No is rejection, no is failure. I agree 100%. So essentially, I will reference this. The New Testament, 1 Corinthians, chapter 7. Where is it? All right, how about this? Yeah, Doc, I'm going to get to it. First Corinthians 7, this is the Apostle Paul writing, and I'm going to put the whole scripture as a reference in the chat. Listen, the husband should fulfill his marital duty to his wife, and I'm skipping down to the third verse, and likewise the wife to her husband. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband.
I think what Jason said there.
What did he say? Okay, hold on. I want to just get to this, and then I want to hear, because it'll stay up in my chat. So I want to be balanced here, because Paul was balanced. The wife does not have authority over her own body, but yields it to her husband. In the same way, the husband does not have authority over his own body, but yields it to his wife. Do not deprive each other, except perhaps by mutual consent for a time, so that you may devote yourselves to prayer. Then come together again so that Satan will not tempt you because of your lack of self-control. So, let's get to Jason's comment. I'm going to flip back to Be Live, and then, Doc, I want you to weigh in. No means no still. If you are married and she's not holding up her end of the deal, you've got to discuss your issues and work through them. Yes. I agree.
You know, you have to do that. I mean, the thing about it is, you know, the scripture that you said that yields one another. I mean, you know, it's like, okay, well, I'm not ready. Well, you know, I'm not ready tonight. You know, I'm not with it tonight. So then what does that say? Does that I don't have the license or I don't have the right to usurp that person's no, even in marriage. You know,
Doctor,
you gotta work through that.
Doctor, you know what? And with what you and Jason said, and Jason, I appreciate you logging on tonight, even as yesterday. And Ricky Vera, I appreciate what you're saying. It is a two-lane highway, metaphorically, of course, where one must stay in their lane. See, and this is my Americanized humanistic view, admittedly, albeit spiritual, I believe. I have to respect, on the one hand, I've got to err on the side of the no. And yet, Doctor, as you said, and Jason, if you said, if my wife is always saying no, what then the question becomes, what else is going on?
At that point, it becomes a conversation that we need to work through.
Well,
that's marriage.
Yes, that is marriage.
That's marriage. You work through the problem, and you know you are respecting, even though it's at a point to where, okay, you know, my needs are not being met, and so let's address that. You know, do I have a book? Yeah, hold on just a second. I'm as part
while you do that, Doctor, I'm going to just put this in the chat.
And it's a book. It's called, I've given this book out 1,000 times. I won't say 1,000 times, but many times.
Cloning it, Doc.
I bought this book at least 5 or 6 times, and it never comes back.
Doc, put it up, hold it up a little bit more. Yes.
You see it?
His needs, over 2 million copies sold. His needs, her needs. Doc, who is the Dr. Gardner? Who is the author? And I'm going to put
the author is William F. Farley Jr.
Okay, hold on.
William Willard.
Writing it down now. His needs, her needs. Willard, W-I-L-L-A-R-D.
F. Farley Jr. He is a psychologist.
F-A-R-L-E-Y?
H-A-R-L-E-Y.
Harley.
Harley.
H-A-R-L-E-Y Harley. Jr. Good, there it is.
Okay, and it's called His Needs, Her Needs. It's called Building an Affair-Proof Marriage. And so he goes in, and what he talks about is the love bank. There are 5 basic needs of a woman, and there are 5 basic needs of a man.